I know.
Good evening, everybody. I'd like to call to order the Wednesday, August 14th meeting of the Oceano Community Services District. Could we please have the roll call, Ms. Cassiola?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Austin?
Here.
Vice President Joyce Sonnison?
Here.
And President Barney?
Here. Please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any comments for agenda review by the directors or staff?
No.
Okay. Seeing none. We have a closed session report of the special meeting of August 14th. Mr. Schultz?
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's meeting, the board met in closed session to discuss two items. The two items was the public employment of the district legal counsel and also the litigation with Santa Maria Valley Water Conservative District versus City of Santa Maria and the district. As to both actions, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you. Before we turn to public comment on matters not on the agenda, for the benefit of the community, the Oceano Community Services District asks that you follow the board meeting guidelines while attending board meetings and treat everyone with respect and dignity. This is done by following meeting guidelines set forth in state law and board policy. Disruptive conduct is not tolerated, including but not limited to addressing the board without first being recognized, interrupting speakers, board members or staff, continuing to speak after the allotted time has expired, failing to relinquish the podium when directed to do so, and repetitiously addressing the same subject. And we appreciate your cooperation with these guidelines. We'll open this up to public comment for matters not on the agenda. I don't have any speaker slips.
Good evening, Julie Tacker. And not to be repetitious, I have asked in the past, and I'm going to ask again because the board makeup is different from 2 weeks ago. Can we get an update on the embezzlement? I think a year has lapsed since we all became aware of what happened, and I think some sort of status report would be beneficial and transparent for the community. Thanks.
Thank you. Other public comment for items not on the agenda? Seeing none, I'll close public comment.
I can just give a quick response.
Yes.
To that comment.
Yes.
So the president has reached out to the district attorney's office, and I have followed up also, and both times we've been told that there's no information that they're willing to release at this point in time. I intend to follow up maybe even more because it has been a year, and that people in the community and the board does want to have some type of update as to what's happening. So we'll try to get some answers for you and for the board, but they do have the ability to tell us they have no information that they can release at this point in time. But that was just as of the last 2 weeks is when he told me that he had no information to release. And you're also welcome to contact the district attorney's office and see if you could get a response also.
I did that.
Yeah. Was your response the same?
Okay, so seeing no more public comment, we'll close public comment and move on to special presentations and report, beginning with our Sheriff South Station office. And we don't have Commander Dowdy with us this evening, but please step forward, introduce yourself.
I'm Kyle Mudson. I'm a senior deputy at South Station. Commander Dowdy is not here today, so I got asked to do this. So this year, in the month of July, there were 498 calls for service. Compared to last year, there were 543 calls for service. There was a handful of domestic violence incidents, a handful of thefts, a handful of burglaries, and a lot of suspicious circs and then enforcement stops. Lately, at the South Station in both Oceano and Napomo, there's been a lot, and rural Rio Grande, actually, there's been a lot of phone scams. It's one of the big ones going around right now. One of the ones posing as a former sergeant from South Station and saying they have a warrant out for their arrest and for skipping federal jury duty. And they go down the rabbit hole of, you need to send us money so we can recall the warrants. So that's been a common scam right now, along with people posing as people that work for Spectrum Internet and stuff like that. Those have been two of the bigger phone scams going around lately. Regarding the transients on the levee, all of that area has been posted to vacate, and cleanups have semi-started. They're still ongoing, and movement is still coming and going from outside the levee by the airport. And then the bigger call for service, there was a residential burglary yesterday morning around noon in the area of 17th Street and Ocean Avenue, or Ocean Street, and actually right down the street. A male was caught inside the residence, actively burglarizing the residence. So he has been arrested and is currently in custody at Slo County Jail. Any questions? Anything else?
Thank you, Officer Kyle. I'll turn to directors first if there's any questions or comments.
I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Not for me. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any members of the audience who would like to raise a question? Okay, seeing none. Officer Kyle, thank you. Our regards and appreciation to the sheriff and the work, good work you do in our community.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Could you pass me the Kleenex, please?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Five Cities Fire Authority Operations. Chief Hallett is here. Nice to see you again, Chief. Thank you.
Good evening, members of the board and staff. Just an update on the divestiture process with the county. There is a special board meeting on September 16th at the Arroyo Grande Council Chambers, and that is to approve an amendment to the agreement between the county and Five Cities Fire Authority regarding assignment and amendment of Oceano Community Service District ongoing CalPERS liabilities and responsibilities following withdrawal from Five Cities Fire Authority and the JPA. So that is moving forward. The LAFCO meeting is scheduled for October 17th to finalize that agreement for fire protection services to Oceano. Just an update on our recruitment process. As I've stated before, due to the uncertainty with fire protection services provided to Oceano, there was four vacancies that were left unfilled. And that recruitment process is moving forward. We do have interviews scheduled for next week with an academy to begin sometime in November, with the goal of having the new recruits on the engines by January. Additionally, standards of coverage is also in process. The deadline for proposals of that is September 9th, and we have had at least three consulting firms expressed interest in providing that report to us. Our total call volume year to date for the FCFA is 2,950 calls, and 492 of them were in Oceano. Okay. No further report.
Questions from the directors?
What were the number of calls?
Our total call volume was 2,950, and 492 of them were in Oceano.
Okay, thank you.
Chief, on the special meeting that's coming up in Arroyo Grande in September, I didn't quite, can you just give us the quick summary of what is the meeting focused on?
So going back to when the JPA was originally formed, there was pension liabilities that were addressed in the agreements with the JPA. There was language within the contract between the county and FCFA that they wanted to clean up, that the county would be assuming those pension liabilities as part of the assumption of the contract for services. So That was an amendment to the agreement, so it's going to go before the FCFA board for approval and then back to the LAFCO board meeting for final approval.
Okay. Okay. Are there any questions from the audience for Chief Hallett this evening? Okay. Chief, you're free to go and fight some fires. Thank you so much. Next, we'll have stand-in for our utility system manager, Mr. Maricino, who is out this evening, and our general manager, Mr. Brown, will give the report for him.
Thank you, President Varney. Members of the board, from the utilities department, utility manager Maricino gave me this list to provide for you. Weekly and monthly samples for coliform, nitrates and nitrites, and other regulated contaminants were performed. No irregularities were found. 11 work orders. There were 26 USAs, 9 customer service calls, 1 after-hour call. We experienced a power outage last Friday that affected the yard and our lift station. We overcame that by using our emergency generator for about an hour while power was out. Power has been disconnected from well 7, which is getting ready to be decommissioned. Staff performed a hot tap for Fairgrove Elementary so they can run an irrigation line. Staff replaced a service line on Lancaster, another one on Wilmar, and one on Paso Robles as well. The latter two have been backfilled with slurry and they're waiting to be repaved. The first of the month, equipment testing occurred for all OCSD equipment, and that went well. Residents requested and staff responded to repairing a manhole on 19th Street by installing a smaller concert ring to lower iron at the manhole and make the surface more smooth and drivable. We had our backup generator and backhoe serviced. Staff replaced a 4-inch meter on Highway 1 that services one of the mobile home parks. We had a contractor repair the natural gas booster pump. Staff flushed the Helena 12-inch water line at Halcyon to improve water quality. Weed abatement was performed at the yard. The fire department, I'm sure, is happy about that. And we posted no dumping signs at Well 8. We've had a few illegal dumps recently there. For Lopez, it's currently at 96.7%, which equates to 47,865 acre feet. There were no SSOs, sanitary sewer overflows, in July. And Oceano CSD used 61.95 acre feet from Lopez, and we pumped less than 1 acre feet of groundwater. That's the utility manager's report.
Thank you. Any questions from the directors?
No.
Okay. And I may just continue the mic for the next item, President Varney. It's the general manager's report. This one's a little more up my alley. So with the help of staff and our contract district engineer and per board direction from March 13th, I completed and staff posted a new request for proposal seeking engineering services to assist the district in assessing our sewer conveyance system and developing a near-term and long-term capital improvement program for the sewer system. And this will be integral to informing our 2025 sewer rate study. This is my proudest accomplishment so far as your general manager. It's up on the website, and it'll be really important for improving our sewer system. The 5-year water rate study will expire on July 1st, 2025, so we'll be working with staff to begin the process of a new 5-year assessment for our water rates as well. At the end of the month and beginning of August, I attended the California Association of Sanitary Agency Conference in Monterey. It was a great conference. There's lots of learning opportunities. I'll be bringing some of those back to you all and be sharing those with the public as well. The crux of the meeting was centered around the importance of recycled water nationwide. It is the one, quote-unquote, untapped source of water that is going to be reliable in the future, and we talked a lot about how that's happening and where it's happening successful. On August 1st, staff met with the County of Santa Barbara to help locate a new internet broadband relay facility to improve access to high-speed internet in the community. On August 6th, I met with John Diodati, the County Public Works Director, to discuss common issues and partnerships between OCSD and the county, and I asked for a list of investments that the county has made in the Oceano community and I'll share that with the board and public when I receive that from the county. On August 7th, I attended the CSD monthly general managers meeting where we collaborated and discussed a group effort for solid waste rate application revision. And so you'll also be seeing that at a future agenda item, the solid waste rate application. On Monday, August 12th, I met with the NCMA technical group to discuss our strategic planning effort and to put out a new RFP for our NCMA required annual reporting and technical support services. Our three-year contract with GSI is up, and so that RFP should be hitting the street tomorrow. There's about a four-week response time for consultants to get on board and let us know if they want to help us with our required annual reporting on the NCMA groundwater usage. I've been working with the County Public Works Department to come up with a template encroachment permit for use of the Oceano Plaza. The current plan is to run a one-year pilot permit program to determine the level of effort for OCSD to assist the county with managing events and minor maintenance at the location. I know the plaza is nearing completion, and so we're hoping to have that in place so that we can see the level of interest from community groups and others that may want to use the public space. And that concludes my GM report.
Okay. Questions or comments?
Yeah, could you give a little more info about your meeting with John Diodati?
Yeah, John and I had it on our calendars for some time just to kind of get together and talk about things like the right-of-way management. The Oceano Plaza was one of the things we talked about, as well as, you know, the level of interest in our community and what the County Public Works Department does and can do for us going forward. John also, as the head of the Public Works Department, oversees the water system. And so we talked a lot about our role in receiving state water and some opportunities coming forward to collaborate with county and other water purveyors.
Okay. And can you explain more about the template for Oceano Plaza?
Sure. The Oceano Plaza is about 90% in the county public works right-of-way. About 10% of it is in the state highway system right-of-way, and Caltrans right-of-way. None of it is in any land that Oceano uses or owns. So, the Oceano CSD. And so one of the conundrums we have is encroachment permits to get into the public right-of-way and hold an event need to be issued by the county. And ongoing maintenance needs to happen such that the plaza is, you know, looking good and in repair, mm-hmm. in a state of good repair. We do not have a maintenance agreement with them. They're interested in getting into a maintenance agreement with us. I'm a little concerned about our ability to take on right-of-way maintenance, and so I'm working with the county to try to strike a balance so that we can assist them. We do have eyes on the street. We can work with South County Sanitation to do some trash pickup. There's nuances like water and electrical meters that need to be worked out. And so there's a lot of hypotheticals, but what I told the county, and I'm sure the board would support this, is we need to do something for the first year and see how it goes. I'd like to know the level of effort it requires from us to participate in issuing or monitoring those encroachment permits. And then before we come up with any final agreements, I want to know how the first year goes.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, we don't know how much staff time would be involved.
Exactly.
Even making arrangement for groups or you know, whatever event might be there. So.
That's true.
Okay. That's good. Okay.
Any other questions from the board on the GM report? Okay.
Okay. Then we'll move on to a presentation on the Brown Act and conflict of interest by Mr. Schultz.
Yes, good evening again. This item is bringing forward to you on your request. It's about the Brown Act training and the FPPC, the Political Reform Act. I assume, Carrie, I'm just going to tell you what next slide's. Next slide. So there's two topics we'll do. We'll discuss the Brown Act, which is found in your government code, and we'll go over the Political Reform Act, which is also found in the government code and the California Code of Regulations. Next slide. So what is the Brown Act? You know, and I kind of keep this slide even up on my wall in my office. The Ralph Act was enacted in the early 1950s. That's how long it's been done. It was after the San Francisco Chronicle did a a 10-piece report on the fact that many local jurisdictions and public entities were having secret meetings conducted in smoke-filled rooms, he called it, and they weren't doing any of their business out in the open for the public. So the Ralph M. Brown Act was enacted back in that time. There haven't been that many changes to it. There's been little nuanced changes, and we'll go over a couple of them in the last few years, but it seems every time that the public entities want to make a change, the First Amendment right group finds them as being you're eroding away at the open meetings and the need for the Brown Act, so it doesn't get through the legislation. And when the First Amendment groups want to change something and make it more restrictive, then all the public entities lobby and it doesn't get changed. For many years, I served on the Brown Act Committee for the League of California Cities, and there were so many draft legislation items that we tried to make changes that just weren't workable from a public entity standpoint, but they never made it through, so it was somewhat frustrating. But basically, the Brown Act, which you have to always remember, is you're doing the conduct of the business of the people. You're here to conduct their business, and deliberations need to be made in the open. You know, and I like the term that, you know, you don't have the decision to decide what the people have the right to know and what they don't have to know. They're entitled to know everything that we're doing, and we have to remember to keep them informed of exactly the actions that we're trying to do. Next slide. What are the major principles of the Brown Act? Is really what I call just three, and you know, it's a notice to the public, making sure that we post an agenda 72 hours ahead of time for regular meetings and 24 hours before special meetings. We have to remember to be transparent, that a meeting occurs when a board's majority, that for us that would be three, it always changes by the number of board members you have, but for us, a meeting occurs anytime a majority gathers to hear or discuss the district's business. And there's always got to be the opportunity to be heard at every single meeting, regardless of whether you're going to be taking action or not. You have to allow time for the public to be heard and the public comment period. Next slide. What exactly is a Brown Act meeting? It's when a majority of the members get together to discuss the district business. It's not just including action, though. It's even a simple exchange of information, workshops, or anything is considered a meeting under the Brown Act. Next slide. There are what we consider, you know, not Brown Acts. There's exemptions to that. Obviously, individual contact, you're able to meet with your constituents one-on-one, and that's not considered a meeting. If you go to a completely social or community or ceremonial gatherings and seminars, that's not considered a meeting, even if there's a majority. If you're in an open, publicized community meeting, and you're a majority, you're still allowed to attend that, and it's not considered a Brown Act by us. Or if you're meeting with another agency, if you go to LAFCO meetings, a majority can go and speak because, again, the reason is you can do that is because those are open and publicized meetings in and of themselves. But you do if you're going to a standing committee, and that would be our standing committees would be, you know, OPARC and the finance committees. Those you have to only be an observer at. You're not allowed to speak at those because those are advisory committees to you, and they could come to you in the future as agenda items. So for standing committees, if you're not on that board and you want to attend, you certainly can. And although there might be a majority there, as long as you just observe and nothing else, that's acceptable. You also have to remember at any of these times when I mentioned it, whether you're at social or ceremonial or any of these other ones, you can't hang out in the back of the room just because you have an exemption and it's not a Brown Act meeting. You can't hang out in the back of the room and then discuss business amongst yourselves. Next slide. So who's covered? You know, it says legislative bodies are covered by the Brown Act. That's obviously your district board. That's all your advisory or decision-making bodies. In that case, it's our OPARC and our finance committee, which are also our standing committees. And a standing committee is one that meets regularly scheduled or continuing jurisdiction, as opposed to an ad hoc committee. If you were going to do a committee that wasn't for continuing jurisdiction, you know, you're only going to put that ad hoc committee maybe for 6 months to study something, then it wouldn't be a Brown Act meeting, and that could be done. And also what some people don't realize is it applies to board members elect. So there's that month of time when you're elected in, and until you're sworn in and seating here, you actually are part of the majority of the board, so you got to make sure that you're not now violating the Brown Act because you've gone from 5 members to maybe 7 or 6 members. So you have to be careful that they're part of that now group of a legislative body. Next slide. So I've got a lot of questions in here. I'm not asking for an answers for you. Just kind of think of them. I'll go through them quickly so that we, you know, I can spend hours as a Brown Act nerd on this stuff, and so I'll go through quickly. But so what if a board appoints a sewer system technical committee? That would require it to be a Brown Act because it's been commissioned by the board. Therefore, it's a Brown Act committee, and it would have to comply with all those noticing requirements and public opportunity to speak and all of those things. But what if the president appoints that same one, or the general manager appoints it? They decide that the president wants to have a sewer system technical committee. In either one of those cases, it's not a Brown Act because it hasn't been appointed by the board. It's not sanctioned, and therefore, you know, that could happen, but they don't have any authority, and they don't have to comply with the Brown Act. Next. There's different kinds of meetings, and I kind of call them the lawful face-to-face, the unlawful chain and wagon wheel, and the non-meetings. We'll go through all three of them. The first one, next slide. The face-to-face, you know, meetings must be within the district limits. There's one key exception. Well, actually, there's two that just came to mind that I didn't even realize existed, but the one key exception is the inspection of district land or facilities. And that sometimes happens if you actually own property outside your district and you want to inspect it, you were able to do that. One came up with San Simeon. When I was with San Simeon, we always had our meetings within the district, but apparently now they're holding them in Cambria. And so there is an exception if you just have no place within your jurisdiction to hold a meeting, that you do have the ability to hold it elsewhere. I didn't even know that one existed because I always assumed you had to have your meetings within your district so that the people have the easiest ability to come to your meetings. So teleconference, we'll go over. It's okay for board members to teleconference. So, you know, meetings should be face-to-face, but there are exceptions that allow you to. One of them is the new AB 2449, which we'll go over, or what I call just the traditional Brown Act teleconferencing. And what we always have to remember is there is always public participation rights, whether you're teleconferencing or not. Next slide. So let's go over the teleconferencing. The traditional Brown Act way was, you know, it requires advance noticing. That means if you're not going to be here and you want a teleconference in, you have to put it on your notice where you're going to be and what the address is, and that's where you're going to be teleconferencing with. You also, at the remote location, you must post it that it's open to the public. So if you're at a hotel room, you'd have to post the notice on your door that there's a public meeting being held here where people could join in. And this is one of the sections we've tried many years to try to change because it just seems very difficult to be able to do or want to do. And one of them, like I said, requires advance noticing. You might know what hotel you're at, going to be staying at, but you have no idea what room you're going to stay at 72 hours in advance. So it's always been difficult to try to deal with. We've just used the address of the hotel and then amended it when we knew what hotel number you were in, but it was always difficult to figure out. You always have to have a quorum within the agency's jurisdiction. So three of you are always going to have to be here. You couldn't have more than that telecommuting outside of it. And with this, the traditional, there's no limitation on the number of times a member can participate remotely, at least under the Brown Act. Many jurisdictions that I've been in, under their own rules and regulations, can limit it to how many you can do. And put other limitations. So I'm looking at just the Brown Act and not what you could do on your own. And some cities just say you can't telecommute altogether. So you can be more restrictive if you want to. You just can't be less restrictive.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. Can we substitute in for teleconferencing, Zoom conferencing,
yes, it's
internet
the same.
Conferencing?
Okay. That's the same.
Okay, so
yeah.
It applies to everybody.
Throughout.
Okay.
Next slide. So during the COVID time, a lot of these rules were thrown out by the emergency regulations that Newsom put forth. And then since then, AB 2449 has given you another option. This allows really the last minute participation remotely. But it only under certain circumstances, cause or emergency circumstances. You're sick, you've got to care for someone else. It does allow you now to do remote, either by Zoom or any of the other ways, from a remote location, and it can be your private location, it can be your home, and you're not required to allow the public come in under these circumstances if it's emergency and for cause. We were trying to get this same language for any type because it just seems, you know, a little scary to allow anybody in your room wherever you are, but we at least got it through the emergency and for cause. And again, the quorum must be in the singular location. That was always acceptable from the standpoint of being able to do this. But there's also a limit of the number of remote appearances allowed. I can't remember the exact amount, but if any time this situation comes through, we can look it up and make certain we've got the right cause, we've got the right emergency to allow it to happen. Next slide. So the next part of it is the unlawful serial meetings I want to talk about, and that's really where boards and councils get in trouble the most is, you know, you really cannot develop that collective concurrence, that's the word you work, a collective concurrence among a majority outside of a meeting. And what the AG said was that can be a collective concurrence, can be just a mere exchange of facts and a substantive discussion is the definition that he uses. So how do these serial meetings occur? We call it the chain or the wagon wheel. A chain is when you have board director A and they talk to board member B and you talk about the agenda item and you maybe tell you what you're going to vote or maybe you don't. And then B goes to C and talks to them about it. And then C goes to D and E, and you've created this long chain now where, you know, at least the last one knows what everybody else has done because it's been passed on from one director to the other, and you've created an unlawful chain meeting. So you have to be very careful. And the other way is the wagon wheel, where director A talks to B, then goes to C. It's like a wagon wheel and talks to all of them, and A definitely knows what everybody's going to vote on. And again, you've now done a collective concurrence with more than a majority, and that's not allowed. What I always tell board members to do is you know, your first, there's nothing wrong with a board member contacting another one and say, you know, I've got this agenda item, I'd like your feedback on it. But what I always tell them to do is ask them, have you talked to anybody else about that? And if board member B says, yeah, I talked to board member C, well, then you can't talk to them. So if you just do that before you get into the conversation, then you know. So then if someone came up to B and said, have you talked to him? And you say, yeah, I already talked to board member A. Then you know you can't. That board member C has got to go find another person to maybe talk to. But you are allowed, you know, the two of you, a minority, can certainly talk about issues and bounce ideas off each other, but you just have to be very careful that you have that opening statement to make sure you don't create a Brown Act violation. And this can happen through phones, emails, and social medias, and we'll go into the email and the social media a little bit. Next slide. The use of email. I can't harp on this enough. You know, refrain from communicating with one another through emails, only because it's so easy to be forwarded. You don't even realize you're doing it. The next thing you know, it's gotten to another council member. Even if your email didn't address a council member, it can be elsewhere. And never use the personal email account. You know, it was easier not to worry about this in the past, but the District Court and the Supreme Court of California have stated that your personal emails, if you're using your personal email for business, they are discoverable. I've seen it where they've found out that you did that, and the next thing you know, you're getting a court order to either turn over your computer or allow someone come into your house to look through your entire computer personal emails because you've used it. So please remember to use your district email. That's why we have it, and that's why it's important, so that you can say, nope, it's never been used for that. You can't use it. So do that, and it makes it much easier on staff because when there is a public records request, then they can pull up that subject matter. We can look all the way through. We can determine if there are exemptions. There's many exemptions, public attorney-client privilege, maybe it's drafts, maybe it's other issues that we can not present that, but it's important for us to be able to respond to public records requests. Next slide. Which was this one? Let me see what we got here. Oh, okay, yes, this one we're going to do, which is another bill that we've always wrestled with, and that's your ability, now that there's social media, you know, what's the rules on the board and how they can interact on social media, because it wasn't addressed ever in the Brown Act or forever because social media didn't exist. So it clarified how a public officials can communicate on the internet. And there is a sunset on this in 2026. I think it'll be extended because it hasn't been as harmful as people thought it would be. But what basically Assembly Bill 992 says is, next slide. So obviously, you know, permit social media interactions unrelated to official business. That's kind of a simple understand. Yes, we're not limiting you from being able to interact if it's with your other board members if it's not business related. But members of the legislative body may not interact with posts of another member on topics within the subject matter of the jurisdiction. So if someone posts something about business, board business, you cannot, even if you wouldn't be a majority, even if it's only one, but it really says it applies to interaction between just two members. They wouldn't, you know, the idea of, oh, well, one can, and but then the next person was going to be a majority. No, they said no one can interact with your post. So that's the issue of Brown Act. Normally permits less than a majority to be able to interact, but not on social media. And the next one even goes into what does it mean by interacting. Next. So that's, you know, just hitting a like button. Any comment, sharing, tagging, reposting, using digital icons, using emojis. There's even 10 more items that they say you can't do, but those are the main ones. So, you know, if another council member posts something, you really just, you have to stay away from it completely. But it does at least allow you, before there was a question of whether you could do anything on social media, because it would be interpreted that other ones could read it and know your position. So at least this gives you a little bit more leeway than ever before, and clarifies a little bit that at least you're not giving up all your rights to be able to post something. Next. And the one thing I do, it doesn't really come into you, but if you were part of land use planning, you know, the big issue I always have with posting, if you post something and you give your opinion on it, if it had to do with land use, those people have property rights, and if you were to post that, you know, you didn't like such and such development, then they could make an argument that you're biased, that you violated the due process rights, and then you have to step down because you've already predetermined before the hearing. We don't have land use, but it still could maybe come up in another issue. Maybe there was an appeal of one of our water appeals. And if you were online, that's a property right, and they're coming in trying to get relief. And if you were to post something saying that you were not going to vote for it, then someone could argue due process. So it's always important if something's coming in front of you. Another caveat I say is, you know, try to put in your post also that, you know, maybe your opinion's preliminary, that you haven't heard all the evidence. Because most people, I think, in your constituents, when they come here to speak, would want you to be open-minded. You're going to listen to all the deliberations. You're going to listen to all of them speak before you make up your mind. So, you know, I kind of always recommend that if you are going to post an opinion, that you, or if you say that, even not even posting it, if you're out there and someone asks you about it, is you always use that caveat. This is a preliminary opinion. I haven't heard all the evidence. I haven't heard all the testimony. I haven't heard all the public comment. And I'm always reserving my right, you know, to hear all of that before I make a final decision. And another one that we talk about is non-meetings that some people don't quite understand is, you know, there's always the individual briefings that done by staff, and that doesn't violate the Brown Act. We can do the chain or the wagon wheel. I choose the wagon wheel with your general manager that's being done, and that's unidirectional, meaning, you know, we're just providing you information. You don't describe, staff doesn't describe the views of any other members, even though we might know that, we're not allowed to tell you what other ones are going to be doing about it. And you don't ask about other members' views. So that's always the possibility, and it happens when either I or the general manager is briefing you on issues that are coming on with in their whatever weekly meetings you have. Next. So what if you teleconference from a Cabo Beach cabana on your vacation? What are the requirements? I'm there next week, so that's why this one was. So if there was a meeting, yes, you'd have to post, you know, you'd have to tell where you were going to be in the 72 hours beforehand, because it's not an emergency, it's not cause. And you'd have to post a little sign outside the cabana saying that you were having a public meeting, and you'd have to let anybody into the public meeting that wanted to. Sounds a little odd, but that's the law, and I've been there before. What if the GM briefs board members one by one? Like I said, that's acceptable. He can. He just has to make certain that he's not telling you what other board members have said about that item. What about a board member briefing other board members one by one? No, can't do that, because now you're creating that chain. What if a board member just calls their colleagues and their other board members and figures out their position, but no one explicitly commits their vote? That's still not okay. Even though they're not getting their votes, you're exchanging information, and that's called that collective concurrence. Next. So agendas, I've mentioned that, 72 hours before the regular meeting, 24 hours before the special meetings. We've got to post it. A brief general description, 20 words. And that including, and that includes the closed session. What I always try to do is, you know, when I review an agenda, when it's in its draft form, and I've mentioned this, Carrie, you look at it from the standpoint of what is the public, are they going to be able to tell without knowing anything about the district? Are they going to be able to tell from the agenda what that item's about? We can always do better at it. We try to catch them, making certain that, you know, the public can look at that agenda and go, oh, I'm interested in that, instead of going, huh? What's this one about? And that's where you need to have that brief general description. And the Brown Act actually says 20 words. I don't know where they came up with that, but that's the number of words they said was good. And you can't do any discussion if it's not on the agenda. You can add, if it's a true emergency, if you found out something since the posting of the agenda and it's 2/3 votes, from my standpoint, I dislike that tremendously by adding anything, even if it's an emergency, because a special meeting is a 24-hour notice. So I'd rather wait 24 hours if it's something that's come up and have a meeting 24 hours later, because at least you've posted it and giving some notice to people, as opposed to just adding it at a meeting. So I've probably in 35 years only allowed that to happen less than a handful. You can talk in a meeting, even though it's not on the agenda. You can talk about scheduling things and future agenda items, and a brief response to the public is okay. You've heard me, though, sometimes on a future agenda item, we start to deliberate a little too much, and you have to say, let's, you know, just what the item is, and let's see if we get support for it, and not deliberate on it. Next slide. Closed session overview, you know, there's only certain items you're expressly allowed to do in closed session. The agenda description is required. There's no minutes or tape recording required. I've got a butt there, but there have been a few cases where, because there's been violations of Brown Act under the closed session exemptions, that the court has ordered them to keep minutes of what transpired. So there has been that requirement. But under the Brown Act, it's not required. The public may comment before the session. You know, there's always a public comment period even before the closed session. If you want to come and talk about those items that are on the closed session, you can't, because it's a special meeting, you can't talk about items that are not on the agenda, but you can come and have the opportunity to talk to the board prior to them going into closed session. Some actions must be reported out and confidentially as required. As far as actions reported out, you'll find me almost entirely say, you know, no action is reported, and primarily because I rarely allow a board or council to take action in closed session, because in my mind, if they do, the action is really just directing staff to bring the item back in open session. So whether it's a settlement agreement, whether it's any action being taken, I still believe that it should be added to a future agenda item. The only time is if for some reason it couldn't wait, then it's reported out. So that's why you usually don't, you know, we're usually just getting direction to come back at an open session, where then the public will have notice of it and be able to deliberate and do it all in open session as to the final action. Next. The permitted closed sessions are very limited, as I said. So you got legal advice on pending litigation, and the attorney must be present during that discussion. You can instruct the real property negotiations as to the price and term, but not the peripheral deal issues if there's ones outside the price and terms of it. You have employee performance and evaluation and complaints, but that's not to all employees. That's only the employees that are directly under your supervision. So in your case, it's myself, the district counsel, and the district manager. The manager is then responsible for all other employees, so you wouldn't be able to have the same performance evaluation and complaints here then. The labor negotiations is the final one you find. So it's very limited, and you know, the one that's probably the most difficult is contract negotiations. If it's simply a contract negotiation you're going through that doesn't involve the hiring of one of the two people, you know, those all have to be in open session. A good example of that is, you know, with our divestiture with the fire. We were able to do that in closed session because there was the real property transactions and the lease negotiations and all those property that allowed us to be in closed session. But the fire district and the county couldn't go in closed session because there was nothing but contract discussion. So it made it much tougher for them to discuss with their boards because it happened to be in the open, and it's always tough to negotiate in the open. So contracts is probably the most toughest one that I find that is difficult. You do that by sometimes one-on-one with board members, but you have to remember there's a limited number of issues that we can go into closed session and discuss. And just for tonight, you know, the question of the embezzlement, I mean, that's not litigation. We're not in any pending litigation with that person. So as a board, we can't go into closed session unless we were going to file maybe our own civil action against that person. But we're not part of the criminal investigation. We don't have the ability to go into closed session because it's not a pending litigation that concerns us. So we are limited, but we have to make sure we comply and find which one of these five it can fall under. Next slide. Enforcement, you know, the action can be set aside and voided after demand for cure. So if a member of the public or anyone can say that you violated the Brown Act, and you look at those, and if you find that you did violate it, you can go back and cure it. And if you don't, then they're able to file the lawsuit and have it set aside if you did violate the Brown Act. There's also actually criminal prosecution for it. It's rare if ever it's happened because it's a state of mind. You have to show that you intended to deprive the public of information to which they were entitled to. Most Brown Acts are, you know, mistakes do get made. And hopefully, usually, you can cure the demand and learn from the experience. You could also, though, enforcement is one of the things is, like I said, you can be required to do minutes and even have tape recorded, have to tape record closed session. That's it. So unless there's any other questions of the Brown Act, I'm going to move on to the Fair Political Act.
Well, let me just, are there any questions from directors at this point?
No, none for me.
I have one question with regards to the teleconferencing. Are districts required, while the districts can do that, are they required to have facility technology in place in order to do that?
No.
There's no requirement.
No requirement to have it.
Okay.
No. But, I mean, the simple of just having a speakerphone in here is pretty tough to say you don't have the ability to do that if they wanted to teleconference them. It would be another one of those policies that we'd like to see. Like I said, you can be more restrictive, and you could actually say, no, we're not going to allow it. You have to be here, or else you're just not here. And I know districts that have done that. We don't have that policy, so then we fall back on the Brown Act. So if a board member was to ask, we would see how we could accommodate that, either through a speakerphone or however, because we don't have a policy that says they can't.
Thank you.
If they said they want to do it by Zoom, right now we don't have that capability, so it might be difficult to do. All righty. So I'm going to briefly go over the Political Reform Act, and I'll start out by saying it is the most single, most important law that we have on conflict of interest. I also will always state when you ask me questions about it that I represent the district. I don't represent you as an individual, and you should also seek guidance from the Fair Political Practice Act Commission, which I think is one of the best that they have out there. They have a hotline you can call in, and they'll get back to you about your question. You're able to write them a letter, and they will get back to you with a written letter on whether you have a conflict. So they are very helpful if you do have issues. But that being said, if you ask me, I will guide you through and give you my legal advice with that caveat that I'm not representing you. I represent the district. So next slide. You know, one of the primary purposes of the conflict of interest is to make sure that when you're doing all your decisions that you're impartial, you're free from any bias, and you're able to make a decision, you know, based on no conflict of interest, either financial or otherwise. Next slide. It refrains you from participating. So there's, in terms of conflict of interest, you have to refrain from participating in a decision where you have a financial interest. And those financial interests usually come up quite a bit in land use litigation and land use issues, which again, we don't do. But we still have to be mindful of them. And it also requires quite a bit of reporting on your financial disclosure statements, your 700 statements we all fill out when you came in. You do them every year, and then you'll do them when you leave. The big issues is that I want to go over that I think come up is just the difficulty in understanding about gifts and honoraries that you receive and knowing how to handle those. And again, I'm always available if you've got questions when you fill out them each year. And I'll have to go through the regulations just to find them again and make certain. So I understand where it's sometimes difficult. It also imposes some post-employment restrictions when you actually leave, also on who you could represent in front of this board after you leave. Next slide. So yeah, as I mentioned, the FPCC is, you know, it's an independent California regulatory that enforces compliances. They have many, many cases where they find people in violation, and there's fines quite frequently if you violated the Fair Political Act. So you have to make certain you do comply with it. Next slide. So I'll go over three briefly: the prohibitions, things that you just can't do; disclosures, meaning that they're going to require disclosures on your 700; and there's also qualifications where if you've got a conflict, you're going to have to step down and not hear the item. Next. So there's two prohibitions. You can't take gifts over it's up to $590 now. I remember when it was like $200. So they keep going up. Any payment, what's a gift, any payment or other benefit provided that confers a personal benefit for which you do not provide goods or services or equal or greater value. And I'll go into that more. But $590 is the threshold. Next slide. And the honorary is a payment for making a speech, publicizing articles, and attending a private conference or anything of that nature where you're paid for it. Social events, when you're paid to go, you can't do that. And you can't get gifts for over $590. There are exceptions to both of them that we'll go through. That's kind of your no-no. Next. So gifts over $590. It has to be from a single source. So the same person giving you gifts, if they tally up 2, 2, and 2, you're over the 900 or the 600 and 590, and you can't do it. And it's for one calendar year. So it's important to kind of keep track if you've got anybody that is going to give you gifts, how much. Next. Gifts include meals, tickets, passes, discounts, travel, so all those things, if they're gifted to you and it exceeds $590. So I'm sure you're thinking, wait a minute, what about my Christmas gifts for my family, and what about this and that? So there are all sorts of exemptions to it, but these are the ones, anything, it's amazing, it includes. So next slide. I think it has even more. Oh, so what do gifts not include? Any informational materials. If someone wants to give you a book on meetings or anything else, you know, self-help even, would be informational materials, and they're not included. Gifts from family and extended family is even allowed under your disclosures and disqualifications. It's much more limited under financial interest, but the gifts from this extends to past even family and friends, and we'll go into that a little bit too. Inheritance, obviously. Personalized plaques, if you get a plaque, that's not a gift. Gifts if equal value is exchanged. So with any of your friends, If they buy you dinner, and maybe it's sushi and maybe it's $150, that doesn't have to be disclosed. It doesn't go to the five-nanny if next time you buy. So if it's an exchange with close friends, that's not what they're trying to stop here. It's the idea of, you know, someone who maybe wants to garner favors, be on your good side, and you don't really know that well, takes you out. That's something that you have to list and not be more than $590. Gifts don't include, though, if someone gives you something and you return it within 30 days, which I've done over the past because I could tell that's what they were trying to do. You just say nope, and you return it. And even for tickets, there's an exemption that if you don't even use them and don't go to the event, then you don't have to disclose it either. It doesn't count towards your $590. And also a single ticket for a fundraising event provided by the fundraiser and not some third party. If they were to say, hey, we want this ticket to go, and it's a single ticket, and if that ticket was $250, obviously you're under the $590, but it wouldn't also have to go on your form 700. Next. And gifts don't, home hospitality if the host is present. So if you stay in someone's other home somewhere and they're there, it's acceptable. But if they're not there, then it actually would have to be disclosed on your form 700. Wedding gifts. And you don't have to include travel, lodging, admission, meals in connection with a speech. So you can't get paid to do the speech, but they can pay for your travel, lodging, and all of those things. And they're not considered gifts to where they account for the 590 and they don't account for the honorary. Next. So, you know, I said you can't go over 590, but gifts totaling 50 or more from a single donor have to be disclosed. Again, if it's not that family relationship or it's not in the exemptions and it's just someone that wants to give you or you get tickets to the Giants game for $250, you have to put that on yours. Now, you know, and I go the farthest possible because, you know, maybe they're not even in the district and they don't do business within the district. But somehow, you know, it could be related somehow later on. Maybe they work at Shell and the next thing you know, there's an MTB contamination in your place and now you've failed to disclose it. So you just, my way of not worrying about whether they do district business, whether there could be that conflict of interest is anything over $50, if they're not that family or friend type of situation, you either don't take it is the easiest way or you disclose it on your 700 form. And if there's intermediaries, which means someone is acting as the go-between, if you're friend gets the tickets from someone who's trying to do a project here, you know, a contractor and wants to get a project and gives the intermediary the tickets. You can't do that. It has to come from the actual source. Next slide. The value is the fair market value or the cost to the donor or the reasonable approximation based on value or similar things. So that's kind of easy to understand. Next. So gifts not received, if you, like I said, you donate it to charity without tax benefits. So if you were to give the tickets or something else, you don't get the tax benefit for it either, though. But you're able to do that, and then you don't have to report it. You can give the tickets to the district, and there's ways that things can be donated to the districts if they're not to a certain employee that don't count as gifts to that employee. And that somehow is done. Many jurisdictions just don't still allow it because it's still a way that, again, land use is where it happens the most in development, where the developer always is bringing stuff into the planners to garner their favor. Or if you reimburse the donor for the value. So you can always do that within the 30 days, and then it's not required to be disclosed, and it doesn't go towards the 590. Next slide. So a director gives a speech to a professional organization. She receives from the sponsoring vendor round-trip airfare, lodging, and coffee, and a Danish at the speech. So you're over the $590. Does that violate the gift limitations? No, but because even though it's over the $590, it's not a gift because it's not an honorary where you're being paid to do the speech. You're just being paid to go to these items. To go to there and be part of it. So that's not considered a gift under that.
Somebody, scenario. If you get, this is just for the,
just
You have to be given the speech.
Yeah, you got it right. You're not getting paid to do the speech,
gotcha.
And you have to be given a speech. If you're just sponsoring vendor says, "Hey, I want you to go to this conference," and you're not given any speech, and you're no different than anybody else, then it is a gift. Okay. So the speech, you can't be paid for the actual speech, but you could get paid if you were doing the speech to do all of that.
Okay.
Next slide. Like I said, payment for the speech or the article or the attendance, that's where it's prohibited at any amount. So they can't give you all those things in the last one and they say, here's an extra $250 for giving the speech. That's not allowed. There is an exception for that. If it's actually part of your profession, if you're a professor at Cal Poly or something and that was your expertise, then there is that fine exception, I think. Or if you're even, I think, as an attorney, if that's what your expertise is, I think you can. So there are some exceptions. So I'm just giving you the 30,000 square foot level that don't do it.
FPPC.
Yeah. Next. So admission, if giving a speech, you know, if they're just paying for your admission, that's okay. The food and drink, all of those things, the transportation, those are all allowed. You're even allowed to get a personal plaque there if it's under 250. I'd have to look to see if the 250 has been raised. If it's earned income as your profession, that I was talking about, if it's actually part of your earned income for your profession and not just as a board member to speak about, you know, relationships with board members. You know, it's not your profession, it's not earned income, then you can't. But there are some exceptions if it's your earned income. If it's a payment from a family member for doing the speech, then there's actually an exemption for that. So if they were going to pay you. And if it's a campaign contribution as opposed to paying you for the speech, there's also some exemptions for that. So there are ways around it, but I usually try to say don't get paid for the speech. Let them pay for your travel and other things if you're going to do the speech. Next. So then we'll talk briefly, and I think we're done, the economic interest in commission's decisions. That's where you could trigger a disqualification. That happens quite a bit in the land use issues. Not as much here, but we'll go through it very quickly. Next. I think there's four or five different ones. And then the big issue, if it's reasonably foreseeable that the decision will have a material financial effect on your economic interest, then you must disqualify yourself. What does it mean by what's a financial interest? You know, you got to go through about eight different steps for that. And so if it was to come up, you know, where you had a financial interest, and we'll go through the different ones, then we'll go through the steps whether it will affect your decision and reasonably foreseeable. Next one. So if you have an investment of $2,000 in a business entity and they were coming forward to ask for that, so if you were, you know, whatever your business entity and they were asking for something in front of us, whether it was a water appeal, whether it was a project they wanted to do, whatever it was, if you had an investment, then you've got a financial interest that's foreseeable and you have to go through those eight steps. If you have an investment of $2,000 in real property, that's automatically foreseeable, and we have to go through the eight steps to see if it will have an effect on that financial interest. A source of income, if it's your employment that's coming forth, then you must also have a financial interest. And if you have an involvement in business entities, director, officer, partner, trustee. So those are where we look at, try to remember it's $2,000 and whether it's a business entity or real property, and that something having to do with that situation comes forward. One of the ways I look at it is, you know, investments. You know, when I've, the 35 years, I never invested in stock other than mutual funds because there's an exemption for that. If you're actually in control of the investment, and a good example, I bring back the MTV, you're invested in Shell Oil, and you have a gas station issue, and you MTV in your water, you're automatically disqualified because you had stock in that. But if you had a mutual fund that you don't control, and they happen to be Shell stock within that mutual fund because you're either, whatever your risk is high, whatever low, and they have Shell and they're the ones that handle that for you, then you don't have to worry about disclosing it. But any of these things will be disclosed on your 700 form if you own stock that potentially could result in a disclosure. Next up. So a board member is going to vote to award a construction contract for a facility to a company that employs his sister's husband, brother-in-law, in a top executive position. Can the board member vote on the decision to award the contract? We really didn't go over this, but actually you can. I saw you shake your head no, because it's an immediate family is the only thing that in this section that we require you to not, and you'd have the conflict because it's a sister, brother-in-law. That's not immediate family, and so you'd actually be able to hear that.
It is sister again, immediate family?
Yeah, sister would be. So if it was a sister that worked at the competing, then you'd have to. Next slide. So the other one is the 500-foot rule, and there's a presumption that there's a conflict of interest in real property if any decision is going to be made within 500 feet. It's always good for maps to be drawn. I don't know if we've ever done that for our board members and where their personal homes are. Or other property, and so that you can kind of see. Again, land use, it comes up quite a bit, that we always have those maps out to make sure that I was in that, because once you're within that radius, you automatically have to step down and not hear the item. For us, it's kind of interesting. There's a lot of exemptions dealing with public works. If the community at large is going to benefit the same as you are, then there's not a financial economic interest in it. For example, if you're going to do a water line right down in front of your home, yes, you're going to benefit from a new water line possibly. It might increase the value of your property because maybe whatever, a sewer line. But there's exemptions for that because the whole community is going to be, and we have to look at those. But it's always, you know, if it's appeal from on the water appeals, I bring that a lot because that's one of I've seen. You know, if that's someone within 500 feet, you definitely would probably have to step down and disqualify yourself from that. Next one. So an agency is considered constructing a hiking trail, and this is a good one that could happen, I guess, or, you know, a pathway that runs, you know, just outside your backyard or just around the corner from you. Would you have to step down and not hear that decision? I would say yes, because you're going to be within 500 feet and you could very well benefit and your property could increase or decrease in value maybe because of that path. So that's what you have to be mindful for. But again, there are some exemptions about that trail and whether you'd be able to fall within those. So the more is just being aware of that 500-foot rule and then bringing it to my attention and then we, or whoever your district council is, and then going through those steps and seeing if there's an exemption for it. And same with gifts. Anytime you're concerned, you just go through it, and there's so many exemptions that you might think you can't do it. And we didn't even get into the gifts one that I remembered. I had a council member that went to a event, and she, in a raffle, a $9,000 trip she won. Mm-hmm. And so the first, you know, thing was as well, there's exempt from that. It's a raffle. If everybody in the public can participate in, then that's not a gift. But in this case, the event she went to was private. It was very expensive to go. And so it was not considered open to the public, that raffle. And so she couldn't take the $9,000 trip, is what my recommendation was, because it wasn't the same as just if it's a raffle out there that everybody else can participate in, but this was more of a private, you know, only certain people were there, and the raffle certainly was not within the ability for most people to pay for, and so it was determined no, it was definitely a gift and she shouldn't accept it. So that I kind of went back, but next, so there's always, we walk through those steps and you think you might have an exception, but maybe you don't. So if you disqualify, if you do have to, then you step down, you disclose it on the record, you know, I have to step down from this item because I'm within 500 feet, or I have to step down from this item because I have a financial interest in the business entity that's in front of us, or I have an investment in the, something of that nature. You have to disclose it on the record, the reason why, and then you recuse yourself. You have to leave the room completely. The only time you don't have to leave the room is actually you have a property right. So if you were actually involved with it, you were actually able to step down. It was your First Amendment rights, and you could speak on the item if it actually involved one of your personal property rights. Next one, I think that's it. So I got through it.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So what if we receive a scholarship at a conference. How does that work?
So it's like a grant. And yeah, yeah. That's not considered a gift.
Okay.
It's a grant to go there.
Okay.
And it's usually okay. done through the organization of it.
Right. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Okay. That's yeah. good. Yeah, so I've only been offered a hearty handshake, so so there's that.
Just to add, thank you for that, Rob. That was a great presentation. It's always helpful to be reminded.
Yeah.
I will say that going forward, we will always help you. If we believe something comes up, you don't have to know all this stuff. It's part of our job is to help raise your awareness. If we think something might be coming your way, we'll contact you. We'll let you know what we think the issue is. And Rob or someone who's in that seat will give you some advice on how to handle it. I will say, just to add on to a couple things that Rob said that I've seen and that I just want to offer my advice. On the social media one, as opposed to the general rule, I think, is just stay away from social media discussions of district business. It's just the safest way to avoid issues. And then the other one I think people get confused about is the economic interest one. A lot of times people assume that you would have to have an economic benefit from a project to recuse yourself, but it actually doesn't matter whether it's a positive or a negative impact, any economic impact. So that's one to keep in mind when you decide that you may want to step aside on an issue. But I think this was a good refresher for us, Rob.
And I kept it at these two subjects, but there's other subjects matters that I'd like to do some training on, the agenda and format, and some other policy and even our code of conduct. So I'm hoping to do that maybe and give you a break for a month or two and bring back another one.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was good to have all the details.
Yeah.
So we've just completed the staff reports, the sheriff station, FCFA operations, general manager, and then the Brown Act. So that was quite a bit of material. I'm going to open it up to public comment on special presentations only, just the special presentations.
That's the staff reports?
No, not staff reports. Yes, the staff reports.
Okay.
Yes.
So just what we've heard so far. Thank you, Julie mm-hmm. Tacker. And about 20 years ago, I went to one of Rob's presentations on the Brown Act and at the city of Morro Bay. I had just been elected in Los Osos and wanted to get an expert. You're so lucky to have an expert guiding you. And the presentation was excellent. Couple of quick things, because I have become a Brown Act junkie or something. You said San Simeon is meeting outside its district, and the reason for that is finding an ADA compliant facility. There are none, but one, and the one doesn't want them. So there are no others. So those who sue restaurants and hotels for not being ADA compliant, San Simeon's right. Also Ground Squirrel Hollow meets outside its district boundaries. They meet in Creston at the fire station there because they have no facilities at all. It's just a neighborhood CSD. I have participated by teleconference when I was a board member in a cabin in the woods. I had a notice on the door for days in advance and nobody came. But there was a board member in Oceano who was in Georgia, I think, many times, and she participated from the hotel lobby. Another board member in Oceano tried to participate in a hotel in San Francisco, and they would not allow the posting. So that one didn't happen. I did have a question, not a question, but maybe you could elaborate on the section where you talk about regular and special meetings. What constitutes a special meeting? Because oftentimes I see a lot of regular business at a special meeting, and I believe special meetings are for special things. And then there are things that cannot be discussed at a special meeting. Salaries for certain people, for example. And then when you're talking about the Political Reform Act, et cetera, I did have a question, and I think you answered it. If you do recuse yourself from an item, can you then speak in? But you're saying only if it's your subject, your property, your proposal, that kind of thing. If it's just, hey, I support the Pismo Preserve, you can't.
You can't.
Oh, I've seen that so many times where board members go from there to there. Anyway.
Thank you.
Excellent presentation. Thank you.
All right. As to the last question, that would be an attempt.
Can we just get finished with the public comment, then you can take them.
Thank you. I'll be relatively brief. My ears really perked up to learn from Mr. Schultz about what's considered closed session and not closed session. And I find it fascinating that back in November of 2022, you guys held closed session meetings regarding the embezzlement, and you guys weren't going to sue anybody. You don't have the authority to do a criminal investigation or a criminal suit of any sort. So it just surprises me that that was hidden behind the iron curtain of closed session for so long, and that all the way through July or August. And with that in mind, like, you really can't even talk about non-management in closed session. So the employee in question really wasn't applicable to that aspect either. So I appreciate this information. I hope that moving forward, that anyone affiliated with Adamski, Morosky, or was in the past, you don't get legal advice from, because clearly it's not in the district's best interest to get that. Thank you so much.
Any other public comment on staff reports? Okay, seeing none, we'll close. Public comment on 7A, and Mr. Schultz, like to respond?
So the first question about special in general, I'll have to look back up, but it really has to do with what you can't discuss in special as to what you can. It's those things that you can. I think you mentioned one of them, salaries, ordinances can't be approved. So there's certain specific items that have to be at a general, but I don't recall the special one saying what you can and can't. And so, but I can get back to you and kind of refresh my own memory about that as to making certain. But it's usually what you just mentioned, you know, approval of any salaries, even approval of contracts, can be, but not salaries. And the big one that is the ordinances that always have to be at a general meeting. So, but I think resolutions can, but it's something I'll take another look at and see. And like I said, you still learn, even though that exemption allowed within the district to be held outside if there's none within. I wasn't aware until I saw the meeting move, and I thought they were violating the Brown Act, and then I looked it up and they weren't. So you're always trying to learn new things. The other question was, can't remember that.
Was it from Ms. Tacker or?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. And yes, if you were doing that, it's only if you have a property right, you're able to do it. Otherwise, what you're doing is you're trying to influence the other board members, which you're not allowed to do. It's not just about not being part of the decision. It's any type of influence you have to disqualify yourself from. I've had that argument many times with board members and said, no, you can't. You have to leave. You have to leave the room. And many even say you don't even have the right if it's a property right, but I believe you still do if it affects you personally. It has to do with your property, then it would. Or if it, you know, if you're the next door neighbor, you could probably make the argument that it does. I have a property right because it's going to affect the value of my property. And so, you know, I still, in that case, I tell them you better get to the FPCC quick and get an opinion letter from them.
Okay, thank you. We'll move to 7B, Board of Directors and Outside Committee Reports. We'll start with Director Gibson.
Nothing to report.
Director Austin.
Yes, I attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting last week. And an update on the redundancy program and the second dairy clarifier repairs. The micropile installation is ongoing still. The next step when the micropiles are all installed will be the new floor, the new slab. So after that's done, then that will be like, it will be, the job will be completed, and there'll be 45 days of like a contingency or commissioning, is what they call it, a commissioning of the new clarifier. And that means the contractor is still responsible, and they will be around if anything happens, so they have 45 days to make sure it's up and running right. And then after that time, then it will be online and be working, and they're looking at that to be, they think they'll be finishing around mid-February, or actually they'll start the commissioning in the first of the year in January. And then they hopefully mid-February they'll finish that, and the new secondary clarifier will be online. Our manager here, Peter Brown, has requested a presentation, and so that's from our general manager. So he's going to come on a meeting here October 9th, and he will discuss the redundancy project and the Coastal Commission conditions, and answer all the questions people have had about the moving of the plant by 2047 and all the stuff that's going on with that. So that'll be an interesting meeting, and it'll be nice to have Mr. Gint here to explain everything. And that's about it. Everything else is going along fine.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
Question. Director Joyce Sunnison.
Yes, the Parks and Recreation OPARC had to be postponed because there wasn't a quorum. However, we did attend the Duck Pond Park renovation project. What's the name of that park?
It's the Oceana Memorial Park.
Oceana Memorial Park renovation. And that was a good turnout. Jimmy Paulding was there, and several people from the county. Parks Department was there. Several people from the community was there. And the children at the park were given the opportunity to come over to the designs. There were several, I think four different designs set up for people to view and comment on, and they were literally commenting on the plans themselves. So children that were there came over and circled things that they liked, put stickers where they liked them, crossed out things that they didn't like, wrote yes, no.
That's nice.
And it was, I thought it was well taken, and there was a lot of good comments. Any questions?
Thank you. I don't have anything to report. And now, Director Gibson, you had a follow-up or question?
Yeah, about the sanitation district. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so are they running into any problems with the repairs?
Not right now, no. Okay. Everything's moving along really well.
And if people are really interested, can't they call and set up an appointment?
Absolutely, yes.
For a tour, so, you know, people, the public can go, you know, go see for themselves what's going on.
Any questions or anything, they're more than happy to meet with the public and give tours of the plant. And you can see firsthand, it's quite interesting. So yeah. I learned what a micropile was. You know, when you go over there, it's really, you know, this will anchor the floor down, so that'll keep the pressure so we don't have any the cracks.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I have a question. Did they say when they'll start the new park?
No. They,
they're just they're still doing that. Yeah.
They're still getting the plans put together and decisions made.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay.
They did have a theme. They wanted to make the park trains, planes, and cars.
Automobiles,
yeah.
That would be neat, yeah.
Okay, we'll open for public comment on Board of Directors and outside committee reports. Seeing no public comment, then we will move on to the consent agenda items. Does anybody have any just opening remark presentation for this? Or okay. Then let me go to directors. Are there any questions from directors or comments on consent agenda? Yes.
Do you I'd have like Director to make Oster? A comment on the consent agenda, and on page 35. Is this the report that was on? Is this a new report? Okay, so it has here on the South County, it has the location would be Oceano CSD and the Oceano Train Depot. So is this something that will be up for discussion, or is this where they already have it planned, or have you made an agreement with?
Yeah, that's President Varney and Director Austin. This is a letter of intent to support the project. It still needs to go through engineering, and final plans and final decision would come back to the board if the grant was awarded. So this is to apply support for the application for the grant. So,
but not necessarily the locations as listed.
Those are the preferred location that the granting agencies are seeking. The letter says that the board supports those locations. Nothing's final. No engineering has taken place. The grant hasn't even been awarded yet. So it's just a matter of...
Well, what I want to make sure is... on the Oceano Train Depot, that it is. This came up before, and it was pulled out because there's not possible to do it over there. And so I don't know
from an electrical
by going
supply
ahead
standpoint,
with the letter,
or
pardon me,
from an electrical supply standpoint, or what?
From the Oceano Depot leases the lot, and there's no place to put those there. They would interfere with our operations, and with the Village Group uses a lot all the time. I just spent thousands over there putting in a new surface and striping. So, in other words, we have the say so, and I rather that this is not even on the list because it would become the charging station. I know it's going to be advertised, and they say there's usually a line of cars waiting to charge, and it would interfere with our whole operation. We couldn't function with it.
Okay,
there.
Good to know.
So I just want to make sure that we're not, by a letter, we're not agreeing that, yes, we want it at this level.
That is true. We are
not
agreeing
to
anything.
First.
I think what needs to happen is the grant needs to be submitted. I think it's actually due in a few days. The granting agency needs to decide if they're going to award the grant to this applicant. And if so, then we would have a chance to further discuss it. I don't think anything is in jeopardy by supporting the letter.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
I had a question on that, which I think was, pretty much clarified in it, but that primarily we're looking at level 3 fast chargers.
Correct. Only level 3
only
fast
level
in this
three.
Grant program.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's good because that's what people stopping in for tourism are going to want to have.
Exactly.
Not a slow charge.
Yeah.
Okay. On the state parks grant, which is 8D, this is just something I think we need to take into account as we're coordinating this with the CMR, that the part of the grant is designed to support the presentations by the Beaver Brigade So that needs to be made clear to the CMR that if they're going to be taking over that portion of it, or they need to be brought in to that, it just won't be the transportation stuff. So I think that's just kind of a heads up as we coordinate with them.
Understood.
And then I would encourage us, in terms of comments, that in terms of the results, what are the consequences, that it, we also, it connects the OCSD to the community, and it improves our relationship with the community, and it presents a very positive image of OCSD to the community. I mean, not that we don't do that in all of our other works, but this is really about another form of service, you know, that we can do. And I think it's good to just specifically state that. Okay, I think that's all I had on that one. And are there any other comments on consent agenda? Go to public comments on the consent agenda.
Good evening again, April Dury. The first thing I wanted to ask about was on the disbursements journal. I have not seen yet, and I didn't see in the current one. And an FYI, real quick, Carrie, the July 22nd meeting is not in this book for some reason, but everything else is. Just for some reason, July 22nd is missing of the packet. I have not seen anywhere where the CSDA, the association that you attend meetings for and have an annual membership to, I've not seen where you guys have paid for the seminar that's come, the whatever you want to call it, seminar, workshop, conference is coming up in September. And so first I'm wondering if that happened, because I have not seen it anywhere on the disbursements. And if it hasn't happened, I'm curious as to why, when you know this so far in advance, and the early bird special stopped on like August 8th or 9th, and so now we have to pay full price. And I know that the district is great about saving money, like they do for large files in a public records request going through this program called WeTransfer, which is great. You're saving money by using this free service. But I'm just wondering, were you guys going to the seminar? Was that going to be purchased? And if it was, why didn't we do the early bird special? And then now it begs the question, are there even hotel rooms available in this facility, in this area? And then the second question I have that you just sparked my mind, Mr. Varney, is we talked a lot about the Parks and Rec getting these grants, and that there's been discussion of Ecologistics taking their fee. And I know that's not technically this, but I'm going to get to that. What I'm not understanding is if we do get this outside agency to take our money, the fee, to then give this the balance to the school or the district or whoever, you know, school district, how will Oceano CSD's finances be paid into the fund for Parks and Rec? Looking at the report that you guys have in this board packet, the staff has taken considerable time to do the work behind the scenes for a lot of things. Are we going to run the budget at a deficit at this point because all this time taken, and we finally do get in money, it's going to go to Ecologistics or some third party, and then only the balance will then go to the school, and OCSD itself has no money? I just don't know that we've ever addressed that moving forward. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any more public comment? We'll close public comment. Is there any response from staff?
I don't know if Ms. Cassiola wants to weigh in on the CSDA conference.
Yes, thank you, President Vardy, members of the board. The CSDA conference was paid for the general manager and myself. I didn't hear any interest from any of the other attendees, or I guess board members here. So that was paid by credit card, and it will show up on the next agenda. And same with the hotel rooms.
And we did get the early bird rate.
Correct. Yeah, we did it.
Yeah, and then President Varney and members of the board, with regard to the route to field trips to state parks, that is a chance to simply reapply for a grant that was received last year. It has nothing to do with Eco Logistics or anyone else. It's a state park, access to state park grants, and we believe that the Lucy and Mar School District might be better a direct recipient of that grant because they're the ones providing most of the field trips and services. So we're looking for part of the consent agenda action would be approve applying for that grant a second time, which is a very easy lift because the grant has been written. It's a matter of touching up an existing application. It's not a new lift straight from the start. So those are staff responses to those questions.
And I would just add to the general manager's comments that both of the grants were written, they were written by me, but they are under the auspices of OCSD. They would, even if we had a contract with Eco Logistics, it wouldn't go through it. So, okay. Then I'll be looking, we'll close public comment, and if there is no more discussion, I'll look for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll move we can approve the consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Ms. Cassiola.
Director Austin.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Vice President Joyce Sonnison.
Yes.
And President Varney.
Yes. Okay, moving on to business items, item 9A. Looking at resignation and appointment of a new alternate to the sanitation district and to further discuss our 2024 committee assignments.
Yeah, I'll take this item, President Varney. So as you're all aware, President Varney informed us all in June that he intends to resign from being alternate board appointee to the sanitary district. Excuse me. And so I think he submitted that resignation to you all. And so the question before you is, you accept that resignation, and then we can go through the committee assignments and make sure we're up to speed on the ball.
So then, I guess we would be looking for a motion to approve my letter of resignation, which was done because being an alternate made it impossible for me to talk with other directors who happen to be the mayors of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, without having a violating the Brown Act, since there's three board directors, and anytime two of them talk, they're in violation. And I'm talking with a lot of people in the community about water issues, so I didn't want to be in that situation.
I move that we accept the resignation.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Director Austin seconded it.
I'm sorry. No, I seconded.
Vice President Joyce Sonnison.
Yes.
Director Austin.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
And President Varney.
Yes. So now into the larger discussion, we do need an alternate the sanitation district.
Do we take nominations, or we make public comment, or just?
Well,
can we ask them? They've been talking all night. Can we get some?
We can still open.
My apologies. Yeah. So yes, we'll have public comment. Okay. Seeing no public comment, then we'll move forward with it.
I'd like to nominate Shirley Gibson as the alternate to the sanitation district.
I accept.
I'll second that.
Let's have public comment again on it, just to make certain that you don't do a motion beforehand as to who the nomination should be. So we'll open up to public comment on this issue now, on your next motion.
Okay. So public comment on the motion to elect Shirley Gibson, or to appoint Shirley Gibson. Okay, thank you. So we'll proceed with the motion.
Director Austin.
Yes.
Director Varney, excuse me, President Varney.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
And Vice President Joyce Sennison.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Okay. Alternate. Linda never misses a meeting.
Is there other action or?
Yeah, so President Varney, what we'd like to do is just take a couple minutes and walk through the list that's before you in the agenda packet to ensure that we have alternates in every place that we need them. I know when we have things like a lack of a quorum for a NOPARC meeting or an OFAB meeting, it becomes difficult to conduct business. So we have alternates in place for a lot of these. I don't think a lot of our advisory committees necessarily need alternates. I back up some of the board members on some of them. I do believe that one last motion we'd ask the board to take is appoint alternates to both OFAB and OPARC so that we are sure to have backups in the event that one of you can't attend one of those meetings. We don't have to miss a quorum.
I'm going to have to chime in because I didn't realize we were doing the finance committee one. I would not recommend you do alternatives in that because it's a standing committee of only two. And by having a third one, even as an alternate, I don't recommend that. At least with OPARC, you have members of the community also. So I'm more likely to see that there wouldn't create any type of Brown Act. But for the finance committee, it's a standing committee of only two, right? We don't have any other members.
Fair enough. So
of
then
the
would,
public. Yeah. And until that, maybe if that increased and we had members of the public also on that committee. But I know that might be challenging, but somehow we've got to be able to schedule where both can be there for that advisory meeting. So that one I wouldn't recommend. But any other ones or any of the county ones, if you want to do alternatives, that's fine.
And so
that's no worries.
If a third director came to the OPARC meeting, they would be there as an observer and not participating in votes. Yeah. Yeah.
Even if there was like only one director, and if the second director came, it still they couldn't participate if there was just
no,
the two.
No, it would be there as the alternate, though, wouldn't you?
But yeah. Well, that,
like the alternate could go, but they wouldn't be able to participate. But I'm just concerned about when there's only two on the finance, and there's an alternate. You could have overlapping meetings where maybe they're discussing the same issues, so you'd have the alternate doing the same, and now you've got a majority of the council.
Okay, so thank you for that clarification, Mr. Schultz. So we will stick to OPARC only.
Or any other county.
Yeah, I just think that from a quorum standpoint and conducting business and getting committee recommendations, OPARC is the only one where it would make sense. So that would be the last placement of an alternate if the board would like to nominate anyone.
Well, I know that Aline Villa has an interest in it. I don't know about it. Director Austin, if you'd be interested.
In which one?
In OPARC.
As an alternate.
As an alternate? I don't mind.
Then I will nominate Linda Austin for the alternate
but if,
at
I mean,
OPARC.
If Aline wants to be it, though, that we can leave her. If you just need one. Just, yeah, then I don't need to do it. Have Aline do it then.
Well, Aline isn't here. You are.
Well, can we
could,
put it off
could still
she's
nominate
here?
Her.
I think.
Yeah, just tell her when she gets back. You're the alternate.
Yeah, but if she requests
if she wants
interest,
it, wait till she gets back and leave her on, put her on there. Yeah. That would
okay,
be fine.
Well, then
yeah,
we can kick that can
yeah,
down the road.
Let's not worry about that now.
For tonight.
Okay, then. If you're all done with that item. Okay.
Well, I think I'd just like to make a comment on the sanitation district that I would like us
to, and I really appreciate your report tonight, Director Austin. I think the sanitation district is an extremely important part of our work here, and we are one of the three agencies that direct its operation. And I would like to see us have some discussion, and not necessarily this evening, on formalizing more our participation as a board in the not in the operations of the district, but in our understanding of what's going on and having more discussion about what's happening there. And I think that would, what that would entail would be, first of all, that directors all receive the agenda for the district meetings. Certainly directors are, as citizens, welcome to attend. And that we have a more formal report at meetings as to what actions are going to be happening at the district, so that we can give direction to our representative. And that's whoever the representative is. This isn't about any particular individual. I don't know what that would look like in terms of logistics of timing and our meetings, since we only meet once, we're meeting once a month for pretty much the rest of the year. But to the degree that we can, you know, I think embody that or accept that we want to be more involved, that we can make arrangements to see how we can facilitate that. I'm interested in anybody else's input.
Well, I think you're trying to put something on it that doesn't make sense to me, but maybe you can explain it a little better.
So it seems what you're looking for is, and it could be a future agenda item more than this discussion here, but you're looking for a type of policy from the board about how reports are made out, not just for sanitation district, but every one of those. And one of the things on my list would be, it's called a really your agenda format, and it would explain each one of these items and what's kind of required under each, what's required under the general manager's report, what's required under the operation report, and what it's about, so that you can, any new members that come on, see these items and go, okay, that's what's supposed to be done. And under reports from the board members, it would explain exactly what they're supposed to do and what the requirements are. And I've seen that in many policies and in others on this issue. So, I mean, it's more of a future agenda item than a discussion on the appointment of committee members. But
correct.
Certainly that.
Right.
And there's just many policies that still need to be looked at and made more clear so that the board knows its responsibilities and duties.
Well, and for me specifically, I think that it's to the board's edification to be more informed about what's going on at the sanitation district as we move into the, you know, all of the tasks that it has, and to, you know, be educated about it and to be providing useful input to the process.
And I would say, you know, it might be the issue of today being the sanitation district, but it could be Old Park, it could be the state water, it could be any of the committees and boards. So I would make certain the policy doesn't just specify one
agency more important than
others. They're all important. And, you know, and not only is what needs to require the reporting, but what is the duty to seek, if there is a duty, and whether you want that duty, is there a duty to seek input from the rest of the board members before certain types of votes are made? So mm-hmm. that's all something that could come back as a future mm-hmm. agenda item, but it's not really under this.
Okay.
Item. Well, I think we all have the ability to read, you know, to read the agenda there for the sanitation district, and if there's something on there that needs looking at, then put it on the agenda. I mean, that makes sense to me, but
yeah, the agenda comes
I don't
out.
Think we need a formal template to, you know, to be able to communicate. I think, you know,
If you have, when the agenda comes out, if you have a question, you can send me an email and say, I'm curious about this. Could you find out and get some, you know, or call the plant, talk to Jeremy. There's lots of ways you could find it out. I think you try, if talk about adding another layer of government in here. That's not really our.
I believe that you can just sign up through the sanitation district to get their agenda sent to you directly.
Yeah, you can.
So that would get you your agendas. So you've got them at the same time that the board members are getting their agenda. And then as Director Austin pointed out, if you see something on there, you could call her and ask her about it. But I still think it's, I mean, almost every single city or district I've worked at has had how that duties and responsibilities are when you serve on other committees. So it's spelled out, and especially with new board members coming on, to wonder what's my responsibilities if I sit on this board. Yeah. So I probably disagree. We don't need the policy. It's just how in-depth it is and what are the requirements of what you decide. Right. If the requirements are no, you don't have to, then that's what we'll put in the policy. And that's the majority will decide on that policy, so you can cite back to it. And like I said, it, just as to what the business items are, what the hearing items are. You know, we've had a lot of questions on just how the, you know, you hear the staff report, you have comments, you open it up for public comment, and then you close public comment, and then you deliberate and vote to make sure that's spelled out in your agenda format and policy, so that it's clear that's what happens every single time. Mm-hmm. So. I would say that policy is needed, but how in-depth it is, that's going to be your guys' choice as to what is in there and what the requirements are of committee members.
Yeah. So I don't see this as a Charles Varney issue or something that I have individual responsibility for. I see this as a responsibility of the entire board of directors and the district to be knowledgeable and involved and informed around this. And I'd like to ask Mr. Brown, because I have, there's this protocol among public agencies where electeds talk to electeds and staff talks to staff. And I've heard from both directors Gibson and Austin repeatedly that I should just be, as an individual, be going over and talking with the director of the sanitation district about issues that impact both of our agencies. And I've said in meetings here that I would, that's not what I want to be doing. If I'm going to talk to Mr. Gent, I want to be talking to him as the president of the district, representing the district, not just as an individual. So maybe you can provide some clarification as to what you see as the appropriate kind of couching of this relationship with the sanitation district.
President Varney, what I'll say is I'm glad we've invited Jeremy to come on October 9th. I think it's going to be a great time to have a presentation, talk about a lot of our questions. I think asking that question at that time is a good thing to do as well. When I've spoken with him, he's very welcoming. He has an open door policy. He will invite anyone to come in any capacity, whether you're a board member or a member of the public. I feel like he's fairly open to sharing what's happening at the sanitary district. So in this particular case, with your interest in the district, I would say absolutely. You know, if you have questions, email, phone call, visit, whatever you need to do. Okay. Get information, and I think he's willing to share it.
I'd make one comment to what you said, though, is that you said you'd like to talk to him as president or on behalf of the district, and that's not what you should be doing. If you're talking to him, you should actually couch that. You can say, I'm president, but I'm here as an individual, unless you have direction from the board make statements.
Yeah, well, when I said I would be talking with him as, if I was talking to him as president of the district, I would be only doing that if I was representing the district.
Okay.
I'm clear on that.
Okay.
I'm very clear on that. Any other discussion on item 9A?
None.
Okay, then we'll move on to 9B, constitutional amendment number one on district infrastructure. Mr. Brown?
Yeah, President Varney, members of the board, the board had asked for some more information on, I think the way the question was asked is another ballot measure possible for fire services? And the analysis that I've done here in the staff report before you looks at ACA 1, which is California Assembly Constitutional Amendment number 1. It's going to show up on the ballot as Proposition 5 in November. Statewide voters in California will consider this, and this is a measure that would drop the threshold from 66 and 2-thirds to 55% in order to pass what, and for the purposes of our discussion, would be cashed as public works infrastructure projects. There's a whole thing about affordable housing and school district measures that are related to that, but for our purposes, if this measure passes in November, there is an opportunity for us to use the measure to ask Oceano voters to look at a special tax, which would be different than what they've been asked for through local measures A20 and A22 in 2020 and 2022. Those were simply for fire services alone. What's different about Proposition 5 is the definition of public works infrastructure. It has to be equipment, buildings, public construction projects. It can't be staffing or salaries, which from a fire standpoint is the biggest driver of their cost. But voters in Oceano could be asked to rehab this building and rehab the fire station in such a manner that we could return fire services here. They could also be asked to finance the construction of a new Oceano Community Services District office building on property that we own. You could even include sheriff station rehab if those were required. And so that type of a measure could be packaged and asked by the voters. And the basic change that that would enable is, in my opinion, is accelerating the conversion and the reestablishment of fire services here at Station 3. And I think that gets at the crux of the issue in the community discussion that's happened. There's some angst about losing the functionality of the station and the response times associated with that. And so because the board asked for an analysis on what might a future ballot measure look like, I put that in this report, and I think it's contingent upon Proposition 5 passing in November, and I'm happy to take any questions from the board on it.
I have a couple questions. So there could be a citizens initiative too, correct?
Correct.
Which would only require, what, 50 plus 1%?
Correct.
And this is totally separate from divestiture. I mean, divestiture is happening.
Right.
Okay. So this would be, you know, in the future.
Yeah, this doesn't undo or change divestiture.
Right.
What this does is, at least in my opinion, it enables the possibility to do two things, to reestablish this fire station as a functional, staffed, response time fire station, and it would assist the district in, at least I would ask that the board consider it, constructing offices for OCSD staff operations, because we would lose that if this was all converted back to fire.
Right. Yeah, because I think the doubled response time is a real issue that really hurts Oceano and individual people. So, okay. I just want to make that clear that it's separate from divestiture. And what's our timeline on finishing divestiture?
That's not the item before you tonight. I'm happy to share that with you. It's moving along. Any other questions on this report?
We're not discussing this.
No, just clarifying questions.
We're getting questions of clarification.
Yeah,
those were my questions.
Well, question would be to do this, but if next year this is owned by the county, so how would that fit in with us?
Yeah, then it's a multi-effort partnership, right? So then we're partnering with the county on what items, what public works infrastructure items we ask the voters to consider. We don't have to own the building or the land to ask for it to be rehabbed and brought back up to a certain condition, but it would require partnerships with other agencies.
That time we're renting here, but then if we were to build our new building, then we would be in our own building.
Yeah, and the timing of that would have to be worked out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Now I understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay, no more questions from the board. Then we'll take public comment on item 9B. Seeing none, we'll close public comment and open it up for discussion by directors. This is not an action item tonight, correct? This is an information item that you're bringing forward. Can the district take a position in support of this if we wanted to?
Well, the position that you would take it would be supporting the legislation, and we could certainly bring back to you a resolution to support Proposition 5. The CSAC and the League, the CSDA, this is very good for public agencies, and so most public agencies are supporting Proposition 5.
Okay, and I like I think the potential uses that you've expressed are good ones, but I wouldn't want to presume that we're going on record tonight that is exactly what we're going to be doing out 4 or 5 years from now.
We're not committing to anything. This is an information item.
Yes. It's an information item. And it's just, if it passes, it gives local agencies another tool in their toolbox to be able to raise revenues at a lower threshold. And that's basically why most are supporting it, whether it's for this or for anything down the line for other things. It provides that. So if there's a consensus, then yes, Mr. Brown could bring back support for it. We don't need a motion, but it seems like that's something that the board would support. Then we'd bring back a motion just to support that.
So you said we don't need a motion. We can just kind of look at.
There's
objection. It looks like we. Director Gibson, are you
I support the idea of an investigation.
So yes, you have our direction to bring us back that.
Sorry, I got off point, Mr. Brown. Again.
And now we'll go to item 9C our final review of the 23-24 budget status as of June and approving year-end encumbrances. Ms. Cassiola.
Thank you, President Varney, members of the board. So this is our fourth quarter budget review. So this is for last year's budget. So we're also going to review our encumbrances, and that's the action item for tonight. So an encumbrance is a contract, so either a purchase order or contract, that's been approved in last year but wasn't fully expended. And it also goes for grant revenues that were granted to us but not haven't been received yet. So that will go over towards the end. But we'll start with our budget worksheets, and these look kind of small, but they are on page 48 of your agenda. So we'll start with our general fund. That includes your administrative fund, your lighting fund, your parks and rec fund, and your facilities fund. So you can see here that the revenues, so those are our property taxes that we receive in the general fund, came in about $100,000 higher than expected. You see there's a shortfall there under other sources of funding. And do note that a couple lines down, there's the same exact amount, and that's from the reimbursement from our administration allocation, which all the expenses in the administration fund are then allocated out to all funds. So that goes for all general funds there, the fire, lighting, parks and rec, and facilities. That also goes to water, wastewater, and solid waste. So you'll see there the facilities fund looks like we received about $105,000 less than we expected. So that's because the board only moved forward with the one EV station at the yard, And we had budgeted as if we were going to go with all three. So we didn't get as much reimbursement there because we didn't move forward with the entire project. So you see under facilities there, we have a large savings there for that exact reason. Then when we're in the administrative fund, we have line items that were high that we were tracking all year. One was legal services. It ended up being $23,000 over budget, and same with classes, seminars, and training. It was about $5,000 over. But we had funds, savings, and other line items to help cover that. I've included the Parks and Rec Fund. You'll see there that we're under budget by almost $14,000. And I've also included the breakdown in two exhibits. One is the field trips to state parks. You can see there that we haven't expensed about $7,000 of that grant, and you'll see later we'll be encumbering that amount. So that's on page 91. It's the basically the detail of everything we spent there and everything we received there. And on the next page, which is 92, we did the same for the events line in the park and recs department. That's because when we were meeting with Oceano Finance and Budget Committee, they wanted to see the more detail, so I included that in the board packet for everybody to see. And you can see there for the Day of the Dead event that was put on by OPARC, they saved $200. We had done a budget adjustment for about $1,100, and it ended up only being about $900. So that's the general overview of the general fund. Excuse me. So now the water fund. You'll see sales came in over budget this year. And we have a water revenue comparison sheet that's on page 90 of your agenda package. And it basically gives the history of 5 years, what we targeted versus what we got. And this year we did much better than previous years. And you see that we were over by $245,000. And that's because consumption was up. We also have a large savings in expenditures. Most of that is from the savings in our water supply, which is Lopez, state water, and groundwater pumping. Wastewater fund. So we had a slight overage in revenues, just about $17,000, and a large savings, and most of that is in personnel expense, and that's because for the majority of the beginning of the actual calendar year, 2024, they haven't switched over to jetting the operations crew, and they've since done that, so we are on to jetting. So you'll see that'll bounce back up to normal. We have our solid waste fund. This is where we collect our franchise fees from the South County Sanitary Services, Inc., the garbage company. They came in slightly higher, only about $2,800 over, and the savings there is mostly in personnel, and a lot of that is because a lot of the illegal dumping we get to quicker, so there's less illegal dump, larger piles of illegal dumping that take up less time, thanks to that Ready311 app we previously purchased. And then our last, so this is our action item. So these are the encumbrances. So on this slide, we have all the contracts, the purchase orders, and grant revenues that we haven't received in this current year that we will receive in this upcoming fiscal year that we're already in. That's 2024, 2025. So we encumber these so that we set aside restrictions under each fund so that none of the funds that are dedicated to this fiscal year that we're currently in are expended by the last ones that we haven't incurred yet. So an overview of those, one is to GSI, which is GSI Water Solutions. They prepare the 2023 annual report for the Northern Cities Management Area, or NCMA. And we still have $7,026 that remain on that contract, and that will roll over to next year. The second is Water Systems Consulting, Inc. We hired to provide staff extension services for also NCMA. We have a remaining balance of $3,050, which will roll over to next year. Then for grant revenues, we have our Proposition 1 grant revenues. That was for the stormwater capture and groundwater recharge project that we did over at the school. So the original budget was for $2.5 million, and as you guys know, we didn't move forward with some of the improvements on 19th Street because the County of SLO didn't allow us to go all the way into that right-of-way, so that lowered to $1.9 million. And the remaining revenues of 1.9 $1,662,629 in revenues we are still expecting. And then we also have expenditures that we need to pay R. Burke and Cannon, who is our construction manager. We still have $294,827 that will roll forward to next year. Same goes for our community development block grant, which we received for the water tank rehabilitation project. So $225,000 will still come in for that project in this current year. And we have $249,000 that we need, and $784 that we'll have to pay Krosno, who's doing the project, and ATS, which is Advanced Technical Services, the Inc. They are our construction managers, so the expenditures and revenues will be encumbered. Another professional contract we have is with Rincon Consultants. They have helped us with the National Environmental Protection Act, which you'll see in our hearing item in 10A, and our CEQA, so, and also our ISMND, which is also in 10A. So the remaining balance of $29,190 will roll forward for all their work they've done there. The next contract is with Cannon. So this is to update our preliminary engineering report. So we're going to apply to USDA for our district's capital improvement projects, and $17,000 remain on that contract. So that will roll forward to next year. A professional services agreement with M&S Engineering for grant writing services for capital improvement projects in the water system was approved, and $22,555 will roll forward to next year. And then, as we went over in the administration fund, the Parks and Rec was granted the Oceano CSD was granted the Parks California Field Trips to State Parks and Beaches grant. And $7,111 remain in that budget, and that will roll forward to next year. So with that, the review is a receive and file, and there's no budget adjustments to consider for tonight, but the encumbrances that are in Exhibit A, which were reviewed by OFAB and came here as a recommendation from OFAB as well, we'll need an action item. And with that, I am happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Seeing no questions, we'll open it up for public comment on this item. Seeing no public comment, we can have director discussion and action.
I wanted to know when will we start working on the next budget?
So, good question. We adopted the expenses and the revenues for the 2024-2025 budget at your last meeting in June, which was June 26. So then these encumbrances and the savings from last year's budget that we just reviewed, these are then incorporated into the final budget, which will be for your board's consideration at your next meeting, August 28th.
Okay, then I will, I'll make a motion that we move forward and approve the year-end encumbrances as presented by Ms. Cassiola.
Did you ask for public comment?
I did. Okay. There was none. Mm-hmm. Looking for a second?
A second.
So, President Varney?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Vice President Joyce Sunnison?
Yes.
And Director Austin, do you want me to review the motion for you?
No, I heard it.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to item 10A, we have a hearing to review and adopt or consider adoption of the final initial study on mitigated negative declarations for the district's waterline capital improvement project. Mr. Brown.
Ms. Cassiola is going to take this item, President Varney, but yeah, I'm happy to work help her as we get through it.
Thank you. President Varney, members of the board, 10A, we have the final initial study of the mitigated negative declaration for the district's water line improvement projects. So the district's water resource reliability program, that was funded through Prop 1 and Prop 84 grants. And it developed a list of 29 projects to replace undersized and aging pipes throughout our system. So the district is pursuing USDA funding, and this requires an analysis and the implications of the projects. And we hired Rincon Consultants to prepare this ISMND. And this is in accordance with CEQA. The notices were filed with the county, the Tribune, the district's website, and the district's notice board. And the final ISMND document has been posted to our website. This went through a required 30-day public review, and it has since commenced. And the district received two comments, which are included in the agenda package. One was from the State Water Resource Control Board, and it states that the district will need to amend the current water supply permit for these improvements, and they gave us the directions on how to do that. They also reminded the district that we must comply with CEQA, which we are. This is one of the CEQA requirements. And they also provided information on how to apply with the state revolving fund. So those were all comments we received back. We also received one during public comment from Mr. Brown, and that has been incorporated as well. So today we're here to review and consider the adoption of a resolution. This resolution will adopt the final ISMND and the mitigation monitoring and reporting program. And those are both attached to your agenda as Exhibit A to the resolution. So this moves forward our project, and the district is working with Canon. It was one of our encumbrances to update the PER, the preliminary engineering report. That's going to help us get up-to-date costs so we know how much we need to apply through USDA. So that is still work being done right now. The district has also sent a coastal development permit consolidation request to the County of San Luis Obispo, and we heard back from the county today. The period was supposed to be through August 12th, but it will be moved to August 16th. The Board of Supervisors rearranged their agenda, and we should know by tomorrow, I believe. Friday. Okay, so with that, I will turn it back to the board for any questions and any other comments from Mr. Brown.
Yeah, Ms. Casciola, one thing that would be helpful, at least for me and probably for everyone, do you have the ability to put up your staff report? In the staff report below, we talk about the project location. I think it's on it's pretty early in the actual below the table of contents, and if we can't find it easily, no big deal. But I do think that it's important to remind the board and the public where this waterline capital improvement project is going to take place. It's kind of dispersed throughout town. It's right at the beginning of the MSIND. The map is really good. If I can grab it. For the board and the public, the crux of this project is improving water lines and all of those yellow areas. And so this is a multi-million dollar capital improvement that we're clearing the environmental. That's the action you're taking tonight, is adopting the environmental document. We're also pursuing federal funds, which is going to require the NEPA assessment. But this is identified as the priority areas where our water lines need improving. They're undersized. We have valve issues. We have meter issues. It's aging infrastructure that I'm really excited that we're able to invest grant money to improve, and those are the areas in town that are the highest priority and that will be part of this project.
I had a question.
Are there questions from the directors?
Yeah. I know that we were doing our capital improvement projects in stages. So can you tell us about where we are, in that effort?
For the water system?
Yeah. All the capital.
So this is the top priority. So these improvements are the ones that have been identified as the most aging infrastructure and the ones that needed to be improved the first. And the fact that we have outside grant money to do a lot of this work, this project isn't fully funded. We're seeking further grant money, which is what the U.S. Department of Agriculture assistance will be sought. But if all goes well and we can kick this project off next year, then we'll be in a good position to get these replaced. And, of course, there will be local construction impacts. You know, roads will be dug up. Water lines will be replaced. So there's all that that the community will have to deal with.
I think that originally we had some kind of a 8-year plan with, you know, doing the projects in stages.
We do. And this is, in the first 2 years, maybe Ms. Cassiola can highlight that a little bit.
Of course. So there were other projects on this list. One was North Swing, one was Highway 1, one was a tank. So we have been knocking them out, but those are with grant funds.
Okay.
So, yeah, to be clear that the job on 19th and Highway 1 was part of this.
They were originally marked in our list.
And the North Swing repair.
Yeah, it was all a part of the Water Resource Reliability Program. It consisted of a priority. We had ones that were high priority, medium, and now we're getting through still some of the high, but then they're all high because they're on the list, but you know.
Everything's high, yeah. Okay, that's what I was trying to get to, so thank you for that.
Any other questions from the board?
No.
I just have one. I noticed that there's quite a bit on the west side of Highway 1. And is that related to those being much older, part of the original, first really developments in Oceano?
So the assessment took place, and when it comes to two things, age and then size, some of these are being upsized because they just don't have capacity. And when you don't have the proper capacity, you end up running higher pressure through your water lines, and then you're more apt to run into complications and water main breaks. So, there's several reasons for how it got on the list, if it's a project here. But I noticed the same thing to the west of Highway 1 is quite a bit of work.
Mm-hmm. Those pipes are started in the 20s.
Yeah.
So there's some pretty old ones. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I can imagine. And I noticed just one other question. This is just out of curiosity, that the fact that we have a number of dead-end water lines was mentioned a lot in the report, and I just for somebody that doesn't understand it, is that kind of a risk factor or just something you kind of want to avoid, just having dead ends in a system?
You typically do want to avoid it. The main reason is water gets stale in there, and then you have trouble meeting some of your contaminant level issues. You have to flush those lines quite regularly. When older communities like ours was built out, typically when the water lines stop, it's often due to unknown time frames for when future development might happen that might extend that line.
Yeah.
And when that development doesn't happen, then you end up with, dead end lines.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Any other questions?
Then, no, I'm very happy to
we
see.
Will open this to public comment on item 10A. Seeing none, we'll close public comment, and we can move to discussion and action. I think we're looking for a motion to approve the resolution as circulated.
I'll make a motion that we adopt the final initial study and mitigated negative declaration, IS-MND, for the district's waterline improvement project.
Second.
Just might want to add that we're also adopting the mitigation and monitoring reporting program as well. Is that's part of your motion?
Right.
Okay, yeah. Perfect.
And the resolution?
The resolution does both.
Okay, all right, okay. I second that.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
President Varney?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
And Vice President Dreissen?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, item 11, received written communications. We do have a letter from Ecologistics where they addressed in a letter to a local newspaper the some statements that were made by directors that they were plaintiffs in a lawsuit against the Napomo development and also against the against the off-roading community and the state vehicle recreational area. And I think that, so I just wondered if there were any comments any directors wanted to make in response to this correspondence that we got from them.
Yeah, I have a comment. First of all, I want to say that Ecologistics is a fine organization and does good things. And I regret that I repeated a rumor about Ecologistics being involved in a lawsuit against the Dana Preserve Project. I, you know, said that without verification, so I apologize for that. However, they're also talking about, could you pass these down, give one to Carrie? Could share that, and you want to get these? But as far as politics, I am passing out how Ecologistics was involved with, you know, the annexation issue. And that became a real problem for the district. You know, they were, they're fiscally sponsoring Nick Alter's group. And Nick Alter is the one that conspired with Supervisor Paulding and other people and essentially wanted to annex Oceano to Grover Beach, which no one was happy about. And, you know, and I also included a letter or an email from Supervisor Paulding to Nick Alter. And this email was secret for quite a while. And then when it finally came out, you know, it was 2 months later, and it had never been discussed, the issue of annexation had never been discussed with the community of Oceano. And that made people angry because it was not a grassroots from the community idea. It was with a developer and a supervisor, and I think Mr. Varney was involved, and, you know, it came from then. It came top down, which really riled up a lot of people. So
I think we need to stay focused on the topic here, which is the letter.
I am referring to the letter because they talk about politics. And, you know, they're not a political organization, and I corrected myself during my comments that they have a political arm of their group, and this is it. And they also were against the Dana Preserve, and they were on Facebook with that. And that is another really controversial issue. And so that is why I'm against, you know, using Ecologistics, because of their connections to political issues. And as we find out, as I've heard, that Lucia Marr can accept the donations for the track. So I don't think Ecologistics is in the picture anymore. And maybe Mr. Brown can tell us about that.
Any other comments from directors?
I have none.
Okay. So, I would like to apologize to Ecologistics for the untruths that were stated about them in meetings here at the OCSD. I understand that they are fiscal sponsors for many 501c3 organizations, and the things that Director Gibson just outlined were not policies or actions of Ecologistics. They were policies and actions of 501c3s that they are fiscal sponsors for, and they fiscally sponsor a wide range of organizations, actually internationally. So their response is clear that, you know, they did not engage in what they were being accused of. And on the basis of that, I offer my apology. If there's something you wanted to add, Mr. Brown?
No, sir.
Okay. So item 12, we have no late received communications. 13, future agenda items. I know that we, you're going to bring us a resolution on the AC1.
AC1.
ACA1, Proposition 5, support
okay.
position.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about
we have also discussed possibly looking at a overall policy in terms of committee reports or representative reports, and I would like to just get that on the list. Are there any other specific future agenda items? No.
The only other one I heard was to perhaps bring back the alternate appointment for Director Villa for Oak Park.
Yes, thank you. And then I was planning to fly down to Mr. Schultz's Cabo Cabana for a presentation, and I... Okay, you are paying the flight and all of that, so I won't be in conflict of interest, right?
The only other one that I haven't picked up, and I apologize for that, probably because I've gone on too many trips this summer, is the media policy still needs to come out.
Okay.
So it's on the top of my agenda to get back to you guys.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Any future hearing items?
Can I go back to future agenda items? And
okay.
I was interested in, I don't know if it's too soon, but more information on our sewer project and what costs we might see.
For the sewer CIP? Yeah, so that will come back to the board. So the RFP is out now.
Okay.
And what we'll do is we'll vet the respondents. We'll attempt to select the most responsible consulting firm, and we'll bring back the details of that. It'll have a dollar amount, so we'll be asking the board to fund that contract. So that'll come back to you in detail.
Okay. And can you foresee any other big ticket items that we might see in the next year, just off the top of your head?
Well, the biggest one we looked at, the water
right.
line improvement project.
Right.
The lift station is undersized. That's going to be one of the top priorities in the CIP. So there's a possibility that we may come back as a standalone lift station rehabilitation project. Mm-hmm. So that's several hundred thousand dollars. But hopefully we do this in the guise of a organized CIP that's funded by certain years. So yeah, that'll all be before you.
Okay. Yep. And what about some type of shed or something at the water yard? Hadn't we talked about that? A place for the guys?
Well, I think it was came up in the grant. I think we were talking about a new office.
Yeah.
You said we'd apply for that. I think we talked about that before.
Was it a grant that we applied for the new well house?
Could be. Well, it was something I...
Because that, that has been applied
for. That.
For.
It was for the new a new office.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was for the well house over at Well 8 we applied for. I have not heard back. I don't think we hear back till December.
But we are working on office and facilities for the utilities yard.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's in the works.
That's what I wanted to know. Okay. Thank you, then.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.